Welcome to Spider-Man and his amazing fans. I'm Bry Guy.
I'm Jason.
Today's episode, The Sins of the Fathers, Chapter 9.
Well, let me be the first to say to you, Brian, Tombstone.
What do you have on your tombstone?
Tombstone.
I kept waiting to hear that.
Yeah.
So you remember these commercials from the 90s,
of
right?
Of course.
Yeah.
Interesting, not that interesting, but little sidebar about that. Very popular computer game when we were kids.
Okay.
Oregon Trail.
Oh yeah.
Probably
we're
played
the Oregon
it.
Trail generation. Yeah.
Is that us? Are we that?
Yeah.
Are those people?
We're too old to be millennials, but we're not old enough to be Gen X's. So.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, that's fair. I kind of like that. But anyway, if you had been on the internet in, let's say, the early 2000s,
mm-hmm.
and you went to find a playable ROM of Oregon Trail for an Apple II emulator that you could install on Windows or something like that.
Sure, sure.
Which were very easy to get, both. But the ROM was just a ROM that had been copied over and over and over again. You know, it was like a bin file. It was probably almost a direct copy from the disk or whatever.
Right.
But anyway,
just wrote it right in. Yeah.
You get to you get just like a day or two down the trail. If you remember the game, when your characters died, you would bury them. And mm-hmm. you could write a message
on their tombstone,
like,
right.
You know, here lies whatever, yeah, or and so on. And in the ROM, there's somebody's previous game, you know, where you pass the tombstones on the trail of previous users, right?
Right.
Well, like I said, early on, you pass this tombstone. It's like, I think it's like, here lies Mary, and it says on it, pepperoni and cheese, with pepperoni misspelled, like P-E-P-E-R-O-N-Y, or something.
Right. Written by someone who didn't know about Google at the time.
Didn't know how to spell, more than likely, you know, because it's probably a little kid, you know, that played the game, and then...
It'd be funny if I said pepperoni tombstone. Yeah. Yeah. And I think they said pepperoni and cheese in that commercial.
Yeah.
What do you have on your tombstone? Pepperoni
right.
and cheese.
Right. So, and therein is, of course, the Oregon Trail joke, which is...
pepperoni. Yeah.
Makes me want to go back and play Oregon Trail again. I'm not going to lie to you.
I would rather play Oregon Trail than have a tombstone pizza.
That much.
Because of how many I ate in college, mostly.
Yeah, that's
probably
fair.
Probably had like
that's
two or
fair.
Three of those a week
did
back
you,
in college.
Did you ever, like, so in the later years then, you know, when I played the game as an adult,
mm-hmm.
I could make it all the way there, you know?
Oh,
when you,
not me.
When you were a kid, could you ever get all the way there? No, me either.
No.
Me either.
No, I didn't play it probably after like grade 5 or 6.
Mm-hmm,
So I don't know how I would do now, but Jeanette and I have a card game based on Oregon Trail.
Oh, we have that one too.
It's a lot of fun.
It is. It is.
But we both die pretty quickly.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Our entire parties.
That card game is hard.
It is. It is.
So I got that card game for my birthday probably 6 or 7 years ago, something
Happy
like
birthday.
That.
Happy belated.
Thank you. quite belated. I'm almost ready to erect my tombstone. But
pepperoni.
So me and my wife and my sister and brother-in-law sit down to play this game.
Mm-hmm.
Because we're all, you know, we're together for New Year's, also my birthday, and we're like, okay, we're gonna play Oregon Trail. And in the card game, you're fully aware as an owner of the game. You draw cards off the deck to see what is going to happen as you're going through. There's no, you know, there's not a lot of, you know, strategery to it.
Sure. It's a lot of luck.
It's a lot more chance than anything else. We set the game up, and setting it up is not trivial either. Like, there's some stuff you got to do and, you know, you get ready to play. Sit down. Okay. And I think the rule was youngest person goes first.
Sure.
Who, of course, in this room was my wife, Kim. Okay,
yep.
Kim, go ahead. You go first. First card. You have died of dysentery. Very very first card.
The irony that she's the youngest one, too, shows that dysentery has no discrimination for age. Right. So then she
very
just watched,
first card.
Then she just watched the three of you play for a couple hours.
I mean, it was New Year's, so she also just drank heavily while we were doing it. But yeah, it was, that's, that was funny.
Mm-hmm. Kim is younger than us. Does she remember Oregon Trail, or was it
already? She does.
Okay.
But I think she also remembers, like, there were like later iterations of it where it was like, you know, kind of expanded and graphically changed and things like that. Sure. And she remembers that kind of stuff. Like, but
3-bit instead of 2-bit or something.
Something like that.
Yeah.
Something along those lines. Yeah. So
yeah. So the tombstone we get this week, Jason, not a pizza.
No.
It's a person. And a person we've met before in the Spidey 94 universe, right?
Right. Yeah. He was like a henchman of
season 1 or 2?
I think it was just last year.
Okay.
You know, or last season, I should say.
Yes, it was. The Tablet of Time episode.
Yeah. The tablets of the time. And he was on Silvermane's side.
Right.
At that time too, right? Like he wasn't the one who went all switchy changey back and forth. He was, if I recall, Tombstone as we had met him previously was all Silvermane all the time.
Yeah, he was kind of hired by him to get Kingpin's wife.
Right.
To get her out of the way of the Tablet of Time.
Yeah. Silvermane. Yeah.
Yep. And so he keeps it in the Silvermane family in this episode.
and if you remember the last time we saw him, he was fleeing the scene of the Tablet of Time disaster with Alicia Silver and her new infant dad, who had been demanified into a baby.
That's right.
And we get some. I mean, we get kind of an answer to the question that we had after that, right? That of. Does he then, does he have all his memories inside a baby or,
right.
Or is he full baby? Seems like he's full baby because it sounds like she's taking charge now.
It's not a Benjamin Button situation.
Yeah, right.
We have to assume he's still a baby now, right?
Well, I mean, it's been.
No, because we saw him last week. Yeah.
I mean, it's been a while, so I would assume that he's, you know, he's probably walking by now.
Sure.
I don't know.
So you think he goes all the way back to being a baby and then just starts the life over? He doesn't keep getting younger. Like, he didn't go inside
a
womb.
No, I don't think. I think once he stopped getting blasted with the Tablet of Time rays, that's all over. Yeah.
That went a little too far. Then he just kind of, he got an okay deal. He has a new life, but.
Right.
He's got to be potty trained again. Got to go through middle school again. Yeah.
And how much worse is middle school going to be this time around for him? Especially when he's out there kneecapping people, you know?
Right.
I mean, it's just not going to play well in the 2000s. He's going to be a kid on 9/11. Just a little kid.
Yeah. He'll be 5 years old.
Oh, man.
But, so Tombstone is being hired by Silvermane's daughter, right? Alisa is
well. Yeah, it doesn't seem to me like they're parted at all. Like to me, I got the sense from this episode that he's like now been in her orbit the whole time, and he is he's kind of like her right hand pseudo undead guy, or weird white face man. Yeah,
gray man, protector of the day man. Right. He's just kind of a henchman. He's a goon for the Silvermane family, I would guess, right?
Right. Yeah. She looked a lot more. She had much more of a bad guy sort of vibe to her when we briefly saw her on screen, right?
A crime boss.
She had kind of a scowl, and you know, she looked a little mean.
She's been around the block a few times since the last time. She's seen some things, Jason, that no foxy lady, as Tombstone calls her, should have to see.
Foxy lady.
I think that's a compliment, right?
It is. I mean, it obviously coined by Jimi Hendrix. Never intended as anything but the highest compliment. Yes.
I feel like in the 90s and later, though, like you don't really call anyone under a certain age foxy. Like, it's not appropriate to call someone under the age of 60 foxy. Like, You know?
Who are you, who is over 60 who you are calling Foxy?
Well, remember, I'm not that far from 60, Jason.
You're far enough. You're far enough, yeah. Brian.
I think Anne Margaret is probably still Foxy.
Okay. Okay. All right. Okay. All right.
Michelle Pfeiffer.
Okay.
She's still Foxy.
Okay. Okay.
I'm just saying, if you were to go to your wife after this podcast and say, hey, Brian wanted me to tell you that he thinks you're pretty Foxy, she'd be like, what am I, 70? She wouldn't be like, aw, that's so sweet.
I don't think she'd say either of those things. I think she'd say, what did he say?
Also an appropriate response. Jeanette would say, okay. That would be Jeanette's response. Okay.
That's her response to almost everything you say, Brian.
It's okay in different tones, and I read into the tones.
Oh gosh,
a slow okay versus a fast okay. It means a world of difference.
Oh yeah, obviously.
Yeah, he calls her Foxy, and she hires him. And I wanted to ask you, and I put this in my notes.
Yeah,
if this kid, or if this episode, I should say, was transplanted from 1996 into 2023, no changes at all. First run. Would people of a certain generation younger than us even understand what Tombstone is asked by Elisa to do, to find negatives? Would they understand what that means?
No. I don't think so.
Okay.
I don't think so. No. So for the younger set who listen to this show.
Yes. Let's explain.
What used to happen before we all had digital cameras is that there would, you would take a film, a piece of like a thin piece of plastic, and it would basically what the camera would do is expose that paper to a certain amount of light. And it would basically create an image on that film that would then get turned into a photo later on. You would take
a tangible photo, right?
You would take a picture. You couldn't see it right away. You'd just have to say, "Well, hope that one turned out." And then later on, you get that. You reel that film back into a little canister. You take it to your local Walgreens or favorite
department store,
photo store, wherever. And you say, process this film for me. And they say, sure, that'll be whatever it was. I don't know, $5.99?
Yeah.
Something like that. And
we'll see you in a day.
right. Well, it was pretty cool when you could get it next day, you know, sometimes they'd be like, all right, come back next week, you know.
And they wouldn't call you or anything when they were done.
You just have to show
back
up
and say, are those done yet?
Yep.
And
yep. You just go in. And the thing that Tombstone is looking for is what they provide after the processing, because they take that film and they create what they call a negative image of it, basically like a reproduction tool, right? So it's like all the lights and darks kind of reversed.
Right.
on this other film looking thing, and
that I still make pictures
you can subsequently then take that negative image and have reproductions done of of the same image over and over again. So it's kind of a way to be able to print those pictures multiple times.
Right. It's like the source material. It's the raw data.
So
Alicia wants Tombstone to get the negatives, because that way nobody can take the pictures and publish them.
And
because if you have the negatives, then
you can make as many copies as you want of that.
And
picture.
No one else can, because there's only one set of negatives. Right.
Correct.
Right.
Now that we understand what negatives are, boys and girls, let's move on to what relevance do these images have that Peter took? Because they seem to just be headshots.
Right. But they're damning. Whatever they are, they're really going to hurt her, and she does not want it
do you think that she's just sort of anonymous enough that she can walk around and nobody will know she's a crime boss? Is that what we're supposed to think there? Right. Like, I don't get
it. Or the animators only know how to animate pictures one way, which is an 8x10 glossy of a headshot, right. A glamour shot.
Glamour shot. of Alicia Silver. Yeah,
because it's on the front page. We see at the end that Tombstone does, spoiler alert, kids, Tombstone does not succeed.
Yeah.
The negatives do reach Peter Parker, Robbie Robertson, and it does get published. And so it is not successful, but it is literally just like a sort of collage of headshots. Yes.
Right.
You're absolutely right.
And
what gangster sees that and goes, God, they did it! They cracks the case.
He definitely didn't have any pictures of her doing anything
illegal.
Criminally. Yeah.
Right.
Illegal is the word I was looking for. Yes.
Criminally, though, is also a synonym of illegally. Yeah, absolutely. With criminal intent, as it were. Yes.
Oh, boy. Yeah. So that's what Tombstone's goal is in this, and it ties into his backstory. Now, I came into this with the lowest possible expectations. I think we talked about that last time.
Same. How... I just thought it was just going to be a check it off a list episode. Yeah.
Right.
Yep.
The tie-in to Robbie Robertson, much more interesting, and, you know, a little bit, it gives Tombstone just a little bit more depth. Obviously, the origin story fleshes things out for anybody, right?
Yeah.
Did you appreciate that? What did you think of his story?
So I like that we got the origin and that it was compelling. It was an entertaining story. It showed him and Robbie as young men together. And I like that his origin tied to a reason why he's still mad at Robbie, who he calls the straight arrow.
Right.
Which I don't know, man. If someone called me the straight arrow, I'd be ticked. I'd be like, how dare you? You do not call me a straight arrow, you foxy lady. So it fed into the origin and to the present. And I really like that. The only thing that I did not like is how he goes from an African-American young man into the thing we see as Tombstone now, I think with fangs, mark, like being thrown into a vat of acid. That's like the easiest way to describe any ugly or disfigured villain in any comic story, because it's the MacGuffin, vat of acid, Two-Face, vat of acid, Joker, vat of acid, Tombstone. Like, it would have been cool if he would have like accidentally got thrown into a mausoleum and the cremation process started. Or something like that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Or he got like frozen with some sort of gamma rays, the other one, right?
Sure.
In
gamma
the Marvel
rays.
Universe,
yeah.
It's the gamma
yeah,
rays.
There's a lot of gamma problems.
There's so much rays of gamma. But if he would have been like shot by a gamma ray, which made him like become stone-like in structure, I would have even liked that more. I don't know.
Yeah,
and I don't know about you, Jason, but every time I've fallen into a vat of acid, it sucks. It's not like I just it ruins my whole weekend. So
I have no super strength as a result of any of the acid falls I've taken.
Yeah.
So I liked the story for all the reasons you cite. As soon as he said, in the origin flashback, meet me at whatever chemical place. I was like, oh man. Oh man, I see exactly what's coming here. And I was because I watched it in my office. I was going to put on one screen, okay, I'll watch the Tombstone. On the other screen, I'll watch Batman 89 and just see if see how close shot for shot this is with the Jack Nicholson metamorphosis. And
it's got to be close. Yeah.
I mean, it's, it's pretty close. But then so this made me say to myself, is this really, like, because they do try pretty hard on this series to, translate stories from the comic canon source material and stuff like that. And I was like, I gotta look up this Tombstone guy and see what's going on. And the comic backstory, I think just because it's a little darker and it's a little bit more complex. I don't know if you had a chance to look at the Wikipedia for him.
No, I saw your link and I was going to click it, but you said it was much more in depth than what we got here.
Yeah. And it's like, okay, so the first thing that I think is interesting, and it was like, oh, that's something, is that he, in the comic books, he's a black guy, but he's an albino.
Right.
Okay. And so I was like, oh, well, that explains his bizarre white visage, you know. Yeah, I mean, that's right.
From the start, he's albino, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, from the start, he's albino, and it's part of the thing that kind of like the people in the neighborhood, like, you know, treat him weird and that helps to set him along on sort of a less good path from the word go.
Right.
Like he's got
right.
like he's got a chip on his shoulder from birth, you know.
Right.
And I was like, okay,
slab on his shoulder.
Well, yeah. That's interesting. And then mm-hmm. and then instead of him and Robbie being kind of friends, they are in school together, but Robbie, even in high school, is getting ready to publish something in their school paper that kind of rats out his gang.
And
Tombstone, before he becomes Tombstone, really intimidates the young Robbie Robertson, gets him to not run the story. Basically, there are a number of beats in Tombstone's comic history early on where Robbie has a chance to put a stop to what he's doing mm-hmm. and does not take those opportunities. Later, Robbie goes to jail in part as a result of that, because he kind of looks the other way, conceals evidence of things that Tombstone is doing. This is all interesting stuff, right?
Yeah, yeah. Better than what we saw.
and in the comic books, he files his teeth and nails. So it's not like some disfigurement with his teeth. He files them down to look scary, because he's also a extremely brutal hitman who really enjoys killing people. Again, another thing they can't really do on this kid's show.
True.
So
even just showing him filing the teeth would have been a
bridge too far. Yeah. Yeah.
Standards and practices wouldn't have liked that very much. Right.
And in the comic books, he doesn't get superpowers until fighting with Spider-Man at a later time. And he's he gets gassed at Oscorp, you know, kind of like with some Green Goblin kind of gas or something like mm-hmm. that. And that's what finally turns, gives him like the super strength and so on. But before that, he is a character apparently for quite a while with just regular human strength and abilities, but you know, obviously works on his body a lot in his line of work. All this to say, there's actually a pretty interesting story behind Tombstone. It's another one of these situations where a lot of the stuff about this character they just can't really use on this show.
Right, but still better than Rocket Racer. Right, I mean,
yeah.
The way Rocket Racer was handled, and I compare mm-hmm. them because them both being in the African American community.
Yeah,
you know, I feel like this was more fleshed out and just treated better than Rocket Racer. But yeah, I would read what you just described, Jason.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. If it was exactly, you know, the way it was taken from the comics, what we got here, I wouldn't have read that comic.
But sure, sure.
It's interesting that they didn't spend more time on the origin, because we've seen Tombstone before. I wonder if mm-hmm. they were just mm-hmm. like, we want to use him again and we'll deal with it then. Like, well, yeah, you know what yeah. I mean? Like, for now, we just want to make it a scary character that we introduce. We'll give him more backstory later.
Mm-hmm,
I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Are you saying like when we first met him, you would have liked to see more origin? Yeah.
Or spread it out over the two episodes. Give us a little of the origin at intro mm-hmm, and then mm-hmm. finish it off here.
Yeah. I mean, if you remember, there was so much going on in that Tablet of Time kind of area.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and
for crying out loud.
The way that I'm getting a sense of the series being put together, I can imagine they had, you know, more stuff with Silvermane's daughter mm-hmm. kind of on the map, even when they were doing Tablet of Time, and they're like, okay, let's put Tombstone in here. We'll need him later, and that kind of stuff. The thing that bummed me out about it, even seeing the origin that we get here, which, like I said, the comic canon stuff is much more compelling, but even this was a lot more interesting than hokey pun making buffoon we saw in the first time we met him, right?
Like, yes, yeah, yeah.
Like
yeah.
I was.
I don't have to breathe. Was right? his big thing? Yeah.
Which
and then never readdressed. There,
yeah, we don't see that addressed at all. No, that doesn't come back. I don't.
That just,
we still don't understand
acid,
that
part of the acid wears off.
Oh man. So yeah, I was bummed out that he was, you know, I can understand kind of wanting to keep some of his stories cards close to the proverbial vest, but sure. But it just, yeah, he just came off like such a dolt the first time, and here he is a lot more interesting. He seems a lot smarter than the last time we met him.
Yeah, he does seem smarter and, like we said, more fleshed out, and he just seems more menacing. Mm-hmm. I just think he seems like more of a threat. And granted, Spider-Man does make mincemeat out of him at the end, and that final showdown, I think they were like, oh crap, we're running out of time, we got to finish this off here, and he just like thwips him once and he's dangling by his feet, and I was like, nah. I think he's stronger than that, but I think he's still better than he was in the first episode. I think he comes across as smarter because he says more, Jason. I think he doesn't just brag about how he doesn't have to breathe.
Right.
But yeah, you mentioned that you had low expectations. I did too. The things that I didn't like about this episode, I think we'll talk about in a minute, but they really didn't have to do with Tombstone. I think the things that I didn't like were other characters. So I was all in all very pleasantly surprised with this episode.
Well, let's talk about that, because I think you're right. I think, you know, the Tombstone stuff is what it is. He exceeded expectations for us.
Yes.
Can we switch over to the Robertson family?
Yeah, that's who I wanted to switch over to.
Okay, give me your feelings on Randy Robertson.
Well, it seems like there's a conflict there without reason. Like I think this is the first time we've heard about Randy Robertson, right?
Yeah, I have not heard of him before.
So
we knew Robbie had a family, but we didn't know anything else.
Right, and we didn't know that there was really any trouble in the home front. And you know, he mentions it and comes home and he says, whatever his wife's name is, I'm home, and she snaps at him for coming home from work. She's like, you're so busy with work, you don't even know. And then she was like, and she immediately is like, I'm sorry. Come to find out, Randy is running with the wrong crowd.
The bandana gang.
And he wants to be initiated like a young Tombstone was. I mean, there's some parallels here. I just thought, like, it was a conflict for the sake of conflict. It was a reason to just kind of push this square peg into the round hole of Randy and Robbie. And it was nice that it came together at the end, but I just kind of was like, where is this coming from? And why don't we just get Robbie and Tombstone? You know what I mean? And Lottie, I think was his name.
Right.
Is that how you felt about it too?
It was really tough for me to try to digest this story that you're right about a character that we hadn't met before. It was hard to swallow all of that without a lot of previous rationale. And frankly, the home that Robbie arrives at, I'm sorry, I just don't, I don't see I don't see a kid like an only child in the financial stratosphere that they must be in, living in that giant house.
Right. Yeah.
having so much trouble that he's like, you know what? I'm going to go join a gang. I'm going to go run with this bandana gang. Like,
Does he say why? Because his dad works too much?
It's pretty much because dad works too much and he doesn't feel loved.
Okay. Well, as you do.
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely a problem that plenty of teenagers have had. I think you said it more accurately, that it's that we don't know, we've never met Randy before, and we don't get enough time to see him actually having any of those problems on screen. He has to tell us about all of them, and that's just harder to go along with.
Exactly. And it's really tricky. And you have to be, you know, really up on your writing skills to introduce a character with an immediate conflict to a main character a more major character with Robbie Robinson, to treat him as sort of an antagonist. Right. Within the first 20 seconds, it was just kind of like, it was a little bit jarring.
For sure. Yeah. So Randy was tough to figure out. I want to talk to about the gun. Because we've never seen a firearm in this show before.
The revolver. Yes.
An actual gun. We've seen all kinds of laser pistols and blasters and stuff like that don't exist in the real world.
I'm only assuming it's not a laser gun revolver.
Right. This is an actual gun.
With bullets. Yes.
Which in the course of the story about the kid who's going to join the gang, yeah, putting a gun in the house, that makes sense. The kid, you know, yeah. The kid's going to try to steal a gun and sure. do all that kind of stuff. I mean, that's an interesting thing.
And his gang asks if he has a strap.
Right.
Remember that? Which yes. is a very 90s term.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, yeah, I got a strap. I got my dad's Red Dead Redemption revolver up in the bedroom.
Oh,
not that kind of gang, kid.
Robbie refers to, because Robbie catches Randy trying to steal the gun right. out of his desk.
Yep.
Robbie calls that gun his old service revolver. That's a quote.
Yes.
So here's who has service revolvers: police, maybe military. You know, yep. although they, you know, I don't know if, that they would call it a service revolver. No. coming out of the military, but whatever. My great grandfather, who was a fire commissioner in Milwaukee in the 40s,
mm-hmm.
he had a service pistol, a tiny little gun. I don't know why. I don't think they do that anymore. But the thing
fires out. Right?
But the thing is, the list of people who have service weapons is extremely short.
Yeah, I think you've exhausted the list. Yeah, I think it starts and ends with police officers.
Right, right. We get part of Robbie's backstory along with Tombstone's. We don't get any mention of any kind of time that he would have needed a gun.
He was a journalist. In work. He was, yeah. His whole life. Right, right. His
right.
whole career. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
They and said, thank you for your service. Here's a service revolver.
Here's a service revolver.
It's a 5-year anniversary gift.
We ran out of watches. We have yes, all these exactly. guns laying around.
We don't have any clocks, so here's a gun. Go shoot
this is,
some good
this
stories.
This is New York. We have so many guns.
So we don't know what guns. To do with the guns. It's this or a Jelly of the Month Club subscription.
And I wrote in my notes, tell me if you had this feeling too. Like when he had, you know, when we knew that Tombstone was going to get back with Robbie, because he mentions that that's one of the ways he's going to help Alicia. Very early on, Tombstone mentions he's got a contact at the Bugle. He's gonna
right.
talk to that person.
Right, Robbie.
We don't know right away that it's Robbie, but we figured it out quickly. And so we know Tombstone is coming. Robbie has this gun in his drawer. Were you thinking, oh, they must have like been in the military? They must have been yeah. in the service together or something.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Or they were cops. I thought they were cops.
Yeah, that's what I thought too. Yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. Again, you don't look at a journalist and think, oh, they have a gun.
Right, right.
Right. It was kind of, again, we got to put it there because we have to create a conflict. So here mm-hmm. it is. Here's mm-hmm. a gun.
Yeah. yeah.
And it's strange because the show really shies away from guns. I would say they're gun shy.
See what you did there.
Appreciate it. So it's interesting that they really wanted to add that, because it really, mm-hmm. looking back on this whole episode, not necessary at all.
Yeah, yeah. I agree. The like Robbie catching Randy, you know, doing some gang at home, you know, didn't need a gun necessarily.
No,
or like Robbie could have come home with a gun, or I'm sorry, Randy could have come home with a gun or something.
Right.
You know,
right.
I mean,
that would have been more compelling. We live in a rough neighborhood. I bought mm-hmm. a gun to protect our family, and then he steals that gun.
Sure. Sure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right. And they seem like small town, the Bandana Crew, the Bandana Gang, the BG.
Yeah.
They seem like a small time kind of gang. Like, they don't need a gun because they're just doing like little robberies.
They're
right.
Doing,
like,
they seem to be engaged in a lot of just sort of B&E kind of stuff.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. To sound ignorant here and like a total cracker, they're not the Bloods and the Crips.
Right.
They're maybe the Sharks and Jets. And now I've said all four gangs that you know. Two of them may be fictional.
Yeah, yeah.
That's... Don't ask me any other gang questions, because I'm done. I'm spent.
Oh boy.
It seemed a little bit all wedged in. Did you recognize earlier than I did the voice of Randy Robertson?
No, I didn't recognize it at all. Who was it?
Alfonso Ribeiro, Jason.
No, it wasn't.
It was Carlton himself.
Come on.
Yes. Yep, I recognized it in about the last 20 seconds, and then I verified it during the credits.
Wow.
Right? Yeah.
Who knew? You did.
Yeah.
I knew. You picked it up on it.
And I thought it took me a long time to find out, so I guess I'm better than I thought. But yeah.
Way to go.
Yeah. And I thought Robbie sounded familiar, but probably just because he's been on this show before.
Yeah, I think that's probably it. I thought Tombstone sounded familiar. Yeah, same voice. Yeah,
I don't have to breathe. Now I'm doing Batman, sorry.
About the same. Same thing. Yeah. I mean, the vata acid, you know, the whole shtick, Brian. It all comes together.
Right. Think about the future. Hey, speaking about the future, we do meet a character who I think can maybe see the future. A psychic, telekinesis, telepathic character is returning, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. See, and, you know, we talked about it last week. I still don't understand Madame Web's motivation. But she did have that kind of menacing, you know, headshot, you know, that one shot at the end, right? Where, like, her face was on the billboard again, and she kind of goes, it's like this sort of crooked smile that we see from her at the end. But she gives Spider-Man good advice.
She's only helping him, Jason. What kind of villain is like...
I don't trust her, but she's only helping.
I know. She's a terrible villain or a really conflicted good person. I can't tell. Uh-huh. You mentioned the billboard. Did you see what the slogan was on the billboard?
Milk. It's all good.
It's all good. I couldn't tell if it was written in sort of like a, hey, drink milk if you want, and we're laid back about it, or like every ingredient of milk is good. Like, milk, it's all good. Or, you know, milk, it's all good. Like, I couldn't tell the tone, but I was like, man, that
but
is
didn't
the
didn't you love it? Didn't you love it?
I loved it, yeah. And it wasn't that far off of milk, it does a body good.
Right, right.
Which was probably still being used at this time and before
Got milk. Definitely was. Definitely.
It was before Got Milk, right? Uh-huh.
Yes, I think this would have been pre-Got Milk, yeah.
But I just loved, like, it might as well said milk. You could drink it. Is an option. Milk is an option.
Amazing billboard. Just fantastic.
They were like, what's a slogan? I don't know. It's all good. Sure. We'll do that one.
Oh, it's terrific.
But yeah, Madame Web. Sorry, sidebar there.
No. Tell me what else you were feeling when she was there. Like, do we agree that she's only being helpful and
right?
Do you have any sense at all of her motivation at all?
I don't. And I'd be willing at this point to hear arguments on both sides, but I'm leaning towards her being good because of how much we're seeing her help Spider-Man and that we're getting more and more of her. And I feel like she's a powerful enough deity, whatever she might be. She's a powerful enough presence that she could have done something negative to Spider-Man by this point.
So
I'm leaning towards good.
Okay.
But if you give me a compelling argument to the contrary, I probably could be easily swayed.
Yeah, no, that's interesting. No, that just makes me kind of want to think that through a little bit more because I guess one of the things that I hadn't considered is, you know, she could be kind of like sometimes in the comic books you get these sort of cosmically powered individuals who aren't necessarily, you know, don't necessarily have like nefarious motivations or are not out to hurt people, but they're also not necessarily out to help people in the best ways. You know, they have their own interests at heart. Yes.
Right. They want to change everyone to lizard people, or they want to take over the world. Right.
No. I'm talking about somebody who I don't know. Like I'm talking about a character who would be like, well, you know, Spider-Man, I can help you, and I can help you see how you can defeat all your enemies and put them all in the grave for good, you know, or something, you know, something along those lines, you know, where it's like, Spider-Man, I can help you become more powerful and kill everyone if you want, you know.
Oh, I see what you're saying. You know, right. that they're yeah that they it, but it's still obvious that it's not going to work out for Spider-Man. I don't right. know if it's that obvious now with Madame Web, and I don't know. I feel like I'm fighting every urge to not read ahead, and I want to make a friendly wager with you, Jason. If you still are convinced, maybe next week that she's negative, and I'm still convinced positive, we'll have to revisit that.
All right. Yeah, we can put something on that. I'm trying to think if there's anything else we missed here in this episode. I liked the first appearance of the Bandana Gang. I liked him crawling over the fence. I
don't think we'll get more
like that. No, I don't. But I just, but like just visually, I liked it. It was kind of like a menacing sort of scene where we hear about this because it was like right after Robbie had looked at the shown Peter like a headline or something like that. This Bandana Gang running around and then and terrorizing people or whatever. And then they kind of in a terrorizing, menacing way, they all like this swarm just goes over a fence and they start beating up a cop. And I was like, oh, that's kind of that was kind of cool.
Yeah. Did you like the final fight between Spider-Man and Tombstone, or did you feel that it was too rushed?
I really liked the fact that Robbie got in on the fisticuffs.
Okay.
Yeah. I really enjoyed that. I do agree though that it's something that they end up kind of having happen a lot on this show, right? Where it's like there's a fight where the bad guy wins or it's a draw, and then Spider-Man doesn't really do that much more to stop him, and then they lose.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean that's just something I guess that happens on these shows a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, Spider-Man has to win.
Right.
And especially when we know this isn't going to be a two-parter episode. But it was kind of a photo finish for me in the last probably minute. I'm like, is this going to be a two-parter? Question mark. Even though we kind of read ahead a little bit so we know which ones to watch for the show, I still was kind of wondering if it was going to come together. And it did feel rushed a little bit. You put that in your notes that there's just a lot in this episode. A lot of settings, a lot of scenes, a lot of characters. Like, it's just kind of kitchen sink-ish.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. It felt long to me. Did it feel long to you? Like, I got to around, like, I want to say, like, 16 minutes, and I was like, I felt like it had been a good half hour already.
Because much happened.
Yeah.
So,
So, yeah. I wasn't, like, rolling my eyes or shaking yawning or anything like that. Yeah, so that was positive.
Yeah.
Did you catch, because when Robbie confronts Tombstone and says, I already ran the story, you can't stop me from running the story, did you notice the byline on the Alicia Silvermane story?
No.
Ned Leeds.
That's it? I did not. L-E-A-D-S?
No, like, L-E-E-D-S. Ned. Peter's friend, Ned.
Ned Leeds.
Yeah,
okay,
yeah, yeah.
Okay, interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I did not catch that. So he wrote that article?
Apparently so, yeah.
Oh, the guy in the chair.
Yep. Or in this case, at the typewriter. Exactly. Or probably a word processor at this time. I mean, let's be honest.
Could be. Or a very big computer.
Yeah. Right. So yeah, there was that, and you know, I don't know, man. End of the day here, it was so much better than I was expecting. It still had flaws. Obviously, the Robertson family story was really hard to swallow and to kind of wrap your head around so quickly. But I'll give it a solid 3 radioactive spiders.
Yeah, I gave it 3.5 because I was pleasantly surprised, and I walked away from this episode going, I kind of like the Tombstone character, which that in and of itself is a monumental feat with how we felt last time. So
yeah, absolutely.
That's what I'll have on my Tombstone, Jason.
I love it. In that case, let's leave it there and get ready to do it again next. I think we got a two-parter next time.
Yeah, Venom and Carnage.
Good stuff. Week. All right, buddy.
Thanks for listening to Spider-Man and his amazing fans. Please rate, review, and subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, or your favorite podcasting app. Follow us on Instagram at Spidey's Amazing Fans. You can reach us by email, SpideyFansPodcast@gmail.com. Our cover art was created by Rob Momartz. Follow him on Instagram to see his latest work.
If you have information that could help us solve tonight's case, call 1-800-876-5353.
Remember, if you enjoyed it, share with a friend.